Here's what I'd like to draw out of this as we head into our discussion today. And I apologize, I may have too many targets today. I may have too many main points. So bear with me as we try to walk through this. But motherhood seems like a good idea in general, as a concept. For raising kids, we can go, yeah, that's good. But just in our humanity, what we will often do is take something that's good, an activity that's good, a practice that's good, and we don't connect our heart to it. And so as you think about your mom today, whether it's, you know, she may not even be living. My mom's been dead for 31 years. But when you stop and you pause, and some of you, since my mom is dead, I don't have to make a phone call or send flowers. We can approach an activity like honoring mom, walking through Mother's Day as a box to check. Ooh, I can't forget to call my mom. I can't forget to buy her a card. I can't forget to do whatever. Or we can do the hard work of actually cultivating gratitude. That's why what you saw was a picture, a way to shepherd your heart so that our activities are good, noble activities, or an actual reflection of our heart. It applies to Mother's Day. It applies to worship. It applies to showing honor to people in your lives, doing the right thing, saying thank you, please and thank you as an external to our heart. It has very little significance, but when we actually cultivate that heart and intention and affection for when we recognize a blessing in our life and it draws out of us a genuine honor. Not a dutiful honor, but a genuine honor for something noble and holy and good. So as you think about your to-do list for your mom today, whatever that is, whatever your plan is, I would just urge you to take at least a little time to try to shepherd your heart to a place where you're actually expressing something deeper than, okay, I did my duty. It's one of the reasons I don't like holidays. Christmas, I've shared that before. Not because I don't like celebrating. It's because in so many places, in so many ways, it seems like somebody's checking a box. And it doesn't land. Make it land for your mom, for your wife, for other women in your life who express motherhood to you. Make it land. Make it land in your heart so that it can land in theirs. Anybody I know the story of how Mother's Day got started?
Wasn't it someone that was bringing flowers to church or something? Is that right?
That was an early application of white carnations for deceased mothers, red or pink carnations for living mothers. That's why we honor them. Anybody know the story? Anybody heard a rumor, an urban legend at all about who invented by Hallmark or something? you hear? Sorry, Scott. Actually, it was a woman, single woman, who just had this idea. I want to honor my mom, and so I think she lived in West Virginia, and she just saw all these amazing good deeds that her mom was doing, and just did a letter writing campaign, and tried to make it a state situation. It did start in her church. That was the first expression of it. Can we do it here locally? And then the carnation was the emblem, the symbol, and she would encourage people to write handwritten letters of appreciation and thanksgiving to the mom. And then it was early 1900s is when this all rolled out. By the mid-1920s, Hallmark did get involved, or some iteration of Hallmark. Carnation industry was thrilled. And it became this very, very commercial thing. In fact, that woman, I apologize, I did not take the time to remember her name. She spent the most of her life, adult life, after that, trying to have Mother's Day repealed because it had become so shallow and calloused and commercial. Her whole intention was lost. And so often in our lives, when something becomes external to our heart, it loses all its power. And if you're paying, you can sniff it. And I pray that we would be a people, not Mother's Day, Maybe that is a commercial thing. It obviously is a good, it was God's idea to honor mothers. But however we express appreciation for anyone in our life, that it come from the heart, that it becomes something that lets us be transformed into a place of genuine gratitude, genuine honor. The Exodus 20 is one of the early pictures of God's mandate for motherhood. And you're all familiar with these. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. In New Testament, that's reiterated as the first command with a promise. There's an outcome. There's a good thing that will happen if we practice this. There are those who curse their fathers and do not bless their mothers. Proverbs 30, and when I read Proverbs 30, there's this picture. It begins, the idea, the theme of that little section begins with this. There are those who curse their fathers and do not bless their mothers. And then it goes through a kind of a list of expressions of other forms of evil. Like it groups it in this, here's some really yucky people. And then every mother's favorite verse, Proverbs 30:17, the eye that mocks a father and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by ravens of the valley and eaten by vultures. Listen, you better get this right, kid. But that is the conclusion to this kind of proverbial wisdom, this call to show honor and defer. And the weird part is just like any other authority that God establishes, it is the office. He set something up in authority, with whether it's government or church or parental authority, and says this is good, and you need to honor it. And we're always looking for the exception why we shouldn't or why we don't have to. They're a bad example, and in this room, I'm sure there's all kinds of examples of amazing mothers, and some that maybe kind of phoned it in. They're human, and yet it does not give us freedom or give us license not to somehow honor the office. I had an amazingly engaged mother until I was about 13. And then she kind of bought into the 70s feminist movement, and she was basically checked out for the remainder of my adult years, and she died when I was 25 years old. And she would still, we had a relationship, but it was a completely different experience. A completely different experience, and yet I'm commanded. And after her death, and in her latter years, I was responsible to show that honor. The more it comes from the heart, that we pause and reflect, whether it's using music or videos or pictures or writing, whatever it is, it's our responsibility to shepherd our hearts into that day. And obviously, in there's so many caveats to, well, what about people who can't have kids? And what about people who lost a child? And there's so many broken, hard, what about those who would love to be married and have kids? And God has not allowed that. There's so many ways that we can recognize single moms. And yet, it does not, while all those things are true and we need to be sensitive and honor that, there's also this very right and proper thing to declare the role and office of mother is something to be celebrated and to express gratitude for. And we don't want to, because not everyone's a good mom. Anybody, all you moms, anybody do it perfect? Anybody want to come on up here and tell us how? We all blow it. It doesn't change. You know, my mom's so great. She wipes my nose, and sometimes she's not very nice to me. It's just the reality of being human. And having a flesh, and it comes out on our kids. And so we can't let those exceptions rob us of the opportunity to celebrate something noble. And the application for that idea goes way beyond motherhood. To the expressions of the New Testament church, this is so foundational. I'd like to remind us again, it's my common theme, this is one of those messages, holiday topical messages are the hardest ones I do, because it's just hard to get my head around. It's one of those, it's my duty to get my head around this. And so my trend is to look for a broader theme and to try to put this concept of how God made women and created this biological and physiological maturing of children into this idea of motherhood and how it relates to femininity and masculinity. And anybody got a good definition of femininity? So I want to put in a little larger context, not to rob the moms, but to just see how it's expressed and can be expressed in so many different ways, whether you have biological children or spiritual children or whatever it is. There's a way to express this femininity that flows out. I'll tee it up like this. I believe with all my heart that mature masculinity is most expressed in being a husband, father, fatherhood, a father's heart. And I believe biblical femininity is most expressed in a mother heart. And they're different. Anybody want to take a stab at what's a good definition of femininity? Emotional. We could give lots and lots of descriptors what is typically true and why that is. By the way, I'll try to put a link to this. There's a fascinating article John Meyer sent me on the biochemistry of tears and their role in emotional health. There's lots of physiological health things that are just absolutely crazy to think of them not being designed with a clear purpose, but even an emotional response. It's just really intriguing to understand how God has created tears, emotional tears, to have a health benefit to us. So if, Paul, you got one? Being more of a relational. So again, we could put in lots of descriptors that would be generally feminine. But in terms of a definition, I think you're right. And there's a brain chemistry. There's actually more than brain chemistry. There's a brain physiology that leads to that. There is a distinct difference in male and female brains that access the two halves and let things flow together in a very unique way. If you look at the dictionary, it doesn't help you. It absolutely does not help you. What it says is those things that are considered feminine. Well, that was insightful. Thank you so much. Scripturally, this picture is we have to look at gender. We have to look at how God made the first man and the first woman to understand what is the point. How is this going to come out in Genesis 1, 26 and 27? It begins with this: let us make man in our image. Our image. This is the first. If you went through the first chapter of the Bible, in the book of Genesis, you would begin to see declarations that are not specific declarations about the nature and character of God. Okay? In the beginning, he declares God to be eternal. He's been there. He spoke. Whoa, he's powerful. You begin to see in the very first chapter the amazing picture of this God that made it all and is now ruling over it all. And this is where he introduces himself as relational. There's something going on in the Godhead, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, three persons relating as one, and yet they are a we. They are a we. They are a three who what. And he says this: let us make man in our image, after our likeness. So man is the race, and let them have dominion. Oops, I'm sorry. Yeah. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing. Then 27. So God created man, the race, in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And so somehow the full expression of the race man and the image of God is found in male and femaleness. And I should probably just stop now and let John talk for about 20 minutes on gender. He's amazingly thought so amazingly deep about this subject. But this is critical to our understanding of how femininity is expressed in motherhood. In a mature femininity will always flow to the heart of motherhood. And there's pictures of motherhood that we're going to jump to Proverbs 31 and just do a real quick overview of some of those attributes of what flows out of that But it's a picture of God somehow. And what's revealed there is not necessarily what it means to be man and the attributes and the descriptors we could list, or what it means to be woman and then listing out the things that are generally true. And it's only generally true, especially since the fall. There's some women that have no emotional context, and there's men that are very emotional. So it's all kind of, it's not a hard line on those things. But what is a hard line is the role and how it plays out and brings this beauty, and how we can stand back and applaud. I heard a pastor one time say, you know, this is true. This is the way God made it. I don't like it, but this is what God designed. If there is any doctrine of God that you go, gee, I wish that wasn't true, rethink the doctrine. Rethink your understanding of that doctrine. Because that should not be our conclusion, with the possible exception of a hell. It's the only one that I can't go, wow, that's good. Anything else? I go, yeah, I really see good. And I'm trusting God will help me understand that as well. But there's something missing if we look at male and femaleness and feel ripped off or apologetic, or shrink back, because there's a beauty of God that's revealed. And it doesn't mean it's easy for men to be men or women to be women or to walk. None of those. Oh, this should be easy. No, we still have a flesh. And so our flesh resists that which God designed for us. But there is something amazing here to rest in. And the simplest picture is that maleness represents that part of God that takes responsibility for it. I got this. Think is Mr. Meyer's phrase. I got this. This is mine. I'm responsible. And the feminine is representative of joining to or responding to, putting ourselves under that. And by the way, in the church, Christ is the maleness that responsible for it. And the whole church, including me and you and all the guys in the room, are in this position of being responding to, of looking to, of letting that headship cover us, that protection cover us. Now, is that inherently femaleness? I don't know. Maybe we make an argument that it is, but it's not. That's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is these roles and how it's played out. And when I think of the Proverbs 31 woman, in the context, it is clearly talking about a married woman. The words there could be used for any woman. But when you start drawing out the qualities, what you notice is a pattern of someone who has joined themselves to something, who's bringing a blessing to something. They're not running off and doing their own thing. They're linked. And if you took the descriptor that said her husband and put in her head, whatever authority that would be, whatever that feminine, that godly woman has joined herself to, you could read it as a single woman and go, oh yeah, this is what God considers noble. That I'm joining myself to someone who is responsible for, and then I can fully express all the, and I don't know if any woman in any season of life who could live out Proverbs 31 all at once. There's a lot there. But there's this blessing that's flowing, and there's this orientation, this interdependence. Her activity is not independent, and this is for me, but there's always this outflow of how do I bring blessing to the we, the us, whatever that us is, whatever context God has you in as women. And for you moms, that's under your husband, under Christ. But every one of us has an opportunity to join with and to participate and yield to and put ourselves together with an identity beyond ourselves. The same call is obviously in the church and in faith. The same call is on men. But we express it in a different way. There's parts that we're responsible for, and those who step into that circle and join us say, I'm going to respond to you. Then we bring our strength and our covering. It is a joining with, and it's not a list of descriptors or activities. This is appropriate for a woman. This is the kind of job they should have. There's all kinds of ways we try to define, oh, that's feminine, that's not feminine. At its core is this, it's not necessarily what you do, It's who you are doing it with and who you are bringing blessing to, and how what is the orientation of your heart? Are you separate and independent? Or are you joined with? How do you do your job? What is the outcome of the feminine? Motherhood in all its forms, biological motherhood, adoptive motherhood, spiritual, they're not my kids motherhood, that heart of motherhood is at its core is to bring good to those. We have been granted a grace to care for and nurture and help bring life to. For the moms in the room, it often is a very, very mundane, tiring, stressful job. Did you catch the story of the video? She starts to write the card. She goes, oh, what am I going to say? She spends her day being a mother, and she goes, oh, yeah. That's what I should say. I'm reminded afresh of what I'm grateful for. And there is a nobility in that. In our culture, it is, and I don't know how this happens if you have 1 to 2 to 3 kids, but we had 5, and I know what we heard a lot was, whoa, you know, lots of comments like, you know what causes that? And you know, there's a certain family size dynamic that I think tips the scale, and they have this incredible freedom to tell you to stop procreating and start thinking. You know, I mean, there's just this weird thing in human beings that, why are you getting here in my business? What difference does it make to you? And I don't know where that, what number that is. For some people, it's probably 1. They see you with a child, you go, you are a fool. What are you thinking? But somehow as a culture, you get up to a certain size. I can't imagine what Cherie and some others with larger families, Karen, have heard going to the store with all the ducklings trailing along behind, and the shocking things he would say. But in general, we would see that as not a very, very valuable thing as a culture. And even when we do see it as a valuable thing, the intention, what you hear floating out of it is, this is my choice. This is my fulfillment. This is my right, which is inherently not feminine or motherly. So even in our culture, when someone does say, I'm going to do this, but I choose it. This is how I want to express myself, rather than seeing it as an inherently noble, which it is, and tiring and stressful. And it's a long job. So little change. So different than raising puppies or chickens. It just takes forever. And you spend so much time doing things that don't seem to matter or make any difference. And yet, you look back and you go, whoa, that was fast. And you reflect on all the amazing joy and happy memories, and block out the smells and sounds and loss of sleep. The feminine is expressed in this place of nurturing and supporting and bringing this connection that Paul was talking about, that is aware of people. It's not where you work, it's how you work. It's how you bring that expression of bringing blessing to others. That's going to inherently be an expression of femininity, that we join ourselves to that. One of the things that has happened, and this is important because most of the feminist debate began in conjunction with a very deep societal change. When the industrial age came, larger families, agrarian-based, you know, in fact, for most of human history, even dads were around the house a lot of the time. It was the family unit was kind of all together in a variety of expressions. And as we moved to cities and jobs began to be taken out of the family, away from the family, then these striations of what it meant to be role or have value began to change. And a traditional society, which most of the world, for most of human history, even today, there's, by population, a huge part of the world's population would still be in a traditional way of thinking, which would mean my identity is rooted in family or village or neighborhood. Even in the 1950s in America, You would go into an area like New York, which is a huge urban population, and people would identify as Catholic, a certain neighborhood, Flatbush, or whatever it is. Our identity was rooted in something beyond our ability to make money or earn our way or earn respect. And so people would spend their whole lives, their whole existence in these places where community was expressed. And that's the essence of the tradition of femininity is, well, I don't get my identity outside this group of people or this family or this tribe or this farm, whatever it is. It is relational. And when our identity gets separated from this group and becomes independent, it starts to move all these questions about what about me? What about my fulfillment? How can I give my life to make you successful and count that as valuable? I have to grab mine. And that's one of the tensions you ladies are going to feel, whether single or married, as you choose to live your life in a pattern as a mother, as to bring blessing, putting aside what you could do in order to bring life and nurture and care to others. It's counterculture. It's counterculture. But what changes that, what makes those questions weren't really asked in the 1800s, because nobody saw the world as I am. What's my degree and what's my fulfillment? My fulfillment is you being successful, us being safe, our family unit, our village, our tribe, our community, whatever it is. That's how we find fulfillment, is in these connections that together we build this life. That's the general psyche of a traditional society. You don't see yourself as distinct. That's still expressed all over the world and some places even in the U.S. It's less common. But that's the heart of the feminine, is we would want to step into this place where my life has value because I bring life to the people that God has given me responsibility for. And it's completely counterculture. And so it's at odds. And so when those who do want to be mothers and do see value in it, when that's the underlying current, this is my fulfillment, it robs it. It robs it of its power. And the picture that God would want to create. And when you read through Proverbs 31, you see that. This joining, this girl is really, really good at this, and it's a blessing here. And this girl is amazing at this, and it brings blessing here. Doesn't lift it up as some separate thing. It is joined to a community, in that context, the family, and her husband and her children. And the whole reputation, the whole community is blessed by her expressing these amazing gifts and talents and diligence and hard work. Because it's in the context of bringing a blessing to other people. There is so much gender confusion because we have taken a biblical mandate. It was a given, an understanding. Well, of course you have value. Look at the good and blessing you bring here. And the culture devalued what the Bible understood as the highest value of bringing good in community, bringing good to family. And now there's a tremendous debate. How does that fit? How does that work? And this is one of those places where as we commit to being a spiritual family together and expressing motherhood, not just for our own children, but for the children of others, not in an authoritative way, but as a servant, as one who connects, one who's paying attention, one who's encouraging, the one who's willing to listen, the one who's willing to lay down your lives for the benefit and blessing of the family of God, stepping into that your life counts. What an expression of femininity. I became a pastor about 5-6 years after my mom had died. And one thing my mom remained pretty good at, even when she didn't understand football, she didn't understand what I did and why I did it, but she was always very supportive. She was always very, very good at telling me, man, you are, that sounds like it was really hard. I'm proud of you. I have no idea what it is. And I remember being a little tweaked as I was recognized as a pastor, that my mom was not there, that she was not there. And I wish you all could meet Bev Meyer. We finally put her on the greeting committee because she just walked around hugging people. Tough German lady. While she was hugging you, she might tell you 4 things you were doing wrong. She had the exhortation of a mother down as well as the nurturer. Dear, sweet person. She just somehow instinctively just, she just came up and mothered me in that place. And I received it like that. And she just expressed it. And it was so amazing. It was so amazing to me. When we think about walking in our gender identities, short message to the men. Please make it safe to express femininity. Please take the pressure off. Please lead well enough that there's clarity, that there's care, there's a sense of not being alone and needing to scramble and find your own way. Please know the women in your life, whether it's your wife or your daughters, church members, well enough to know how you can bring your strength and empower them. Take weight off them that they can rest in who God made them to be. Don't make them grab for their own protection, their own safety, their own well-being. And to the ladies, I would please urge you, take a risk. Call men to care for you. I know there's a big girl power message out there. And it's not about talent. It's not about what you might be able to do. It's about a posture. And there is a crisis of femininity in the kingdom. But I believe there's a bigger crisis of masculinity. And you can help us to step up. You can help us. Men need a noble call. If we don't think we're needed, we'll lay on the couch. We lay on the couch sometimes when we know we're needed, but we will really lay on the couch. Your posture towards us calls us to bringing strength to you and empowering that. In all the brokenness, I understand we have a responsibility to initiate. I'm just telling you, when I've seen examples of godly femininity, it has just snapped me to a different response. From single women, we first got saved, and I've watched my wife for 35 almost years entrust herself to me, wait on me most of the time. She's not a perfect person, close, but not perfect. And I am continually amazed at how her expectation, it's like she's just willing to walk off this stage going, "You got me." And this confidence and peace that she expresses, "I trust you. Lead me into hard, scary things." Even when I led badly, that expression of femininity, of not needing to take control, of not needing to express something other than, "I am here to bring good." If you've ever been in her home, that's her, how can I bring good? How can I bring good? That's the way she's been since she was a young mom. How can I bring good? You can help us. You can help us. You can help your husbands. You can help your sons. Especially as they're reaching the end of their time with you, by changing from "Mom, do this," to "Lead me, protect me, care for me. Give me your strength. Give me your strength." And that may be a really hard, scary to think about, but I pray you'll consider that. I pray you'll consider it. The world measures motherhood in what does it cost? What do you give up? What do you lose? From your figure to trips to freedom to... It's just the world. Cost-benefit analysis. And throughout the United States and Europe and Hong Kong and Tokyo and says the cost is too high. We don't want kids. We don't want kids. God measures motherhood in the opportunities to bring blessing. And regardless, married, single, spiritual, biological, will you measure your life, what you bring to this the kingdom, to this economy, to this spiritual family, to your biological family? Will you bring the ability to believe what God says, that nurture and life? You see, you only get a few lives you get to touch deeply over the course of your life. We wish we were going to affect thousands or hundreds. We're only going to impact deeply a few people. And there's so many expressions of when life is not what certain women would want, where they continue to express that femininity. And for moms who are married, and if you've chosen, it's not whether you work or not. It's what is your posture and why have you made that decision? Is it expressing a joining to, a responsibility for, and a responding to? Is that what's being expressed? And there's a glory, and God says, there I am. There we are. There we are. Does everybody see this picture? And it brings him glory. You get to be in the feminine. You get to be like God, express the nature of God as creator. You get to co-create with God as women, biologically or not. You are a part of bringing life and expressing that picture. We get to create life as women and men. Ladies, you are a creator of life. That's God-like. That's why it's called procreation. You get to cooperate with what God is doing. And bring life. And then care for it in a godlike way. And God is not independent. God is not looking at what's in it for me. There's a continual conduit. And as you embrace that as mother, with a mother's heart, with a mother's faith, to bring good, there's a glory. If we believe the promises of God. If we listen to the voices of the world, it's all whacked. It's an amazing picture. And you don't have to even be an adult woman to start expressing that same picture. Are you joining with? Are you cooperating with? Are you resting in God's plan for your life through your parents? And expressing a trust that God will lead you into good things. There's so many opportunities. The minute we step out and go, what's in it for me? How am I going to express it? We damage that. And if we were talking about men, I'd give you lots of examples of how men do that. But you have a tremendous opportunity to demonstrate at the very core of your person and your identity the image of God in a glorious way that the world will know that we are his disciples. Let's pray. Father, I thank you. I thank you for every woman in this room. I thank you for the moms. I so many young moms, really, really busy, stressful time. God, we celebrate their investment. We celebrate every sacrificial act to care for and to nurture and to pay attention and fight for a relationship, even when kids are pushing away, that dogged determination to figure out what's really going on. God, I thank you for that determination. I thank you for that expression of the feminine. Thank you for those who are joining themselves with and trusting you as a head ultimately will lead them into good things and protect them. God, may we be a people who model this amazing picture of masculine and feminine expressed in motherhood. We just want to celebrate it, agree with you, bring honor to it, rest in what you say, the identity you give us as male and female, and bless you. For the chance we get to walk in your image, to demonstrate to this world who you really are. I do celebrate every woman. In Jesus' name, amen.